Chapter 86. Mrs. Bennet's trip to London was not, as she explained at length to anyone unwise enough to ask about it, undertaken in pursuit of pleasure. Left to herself, she should not have risked it, for the journey was tedious and the inns unsatisfactory. But her doctor insisted upon it.
Dr. Gower would hear no contradiction. Your well-being depends upon it, ma'am. That was what he said, and the orders of a medical man are never to be ignored. So here I am.
No, indeed, replied Mrs. Gardiner, as she, Mary, and Mrs. Bennet sat in a rather formal circle, drinking their morning coffee.
You were very wise to come. And who is it you are to see?
His name is Dr. Simmons, said Mrs. Bennet respectfully. And he takes a particular interest in ladies who suffer with their nerves. He charges a guinea a visit, but what is money where one's health is concerned?
She is still very handsome for her age, thought Mary, covertly watching her mother from under lowered eyes, and as proud of her appearance as ever. As if to confirm the truth of Mary's observation, Mrs. Bennet glanced quickly at her reflection in one of her sister-in-law's pier glasses, made a minute adjustment to her hair and another to her cap, before turning away with the satisfaction of having found everything as much to her liking as usual.
"You look very well, Mama," ventured Mary. "Have your nerves been troubling you? I should not have guessed it from your appearance."
"I would not expect you to understand. You have no notion of what I suffer."
"And how long will the treatment last?"
interrupted Mrs. Gardiner.
"Usually a week is sufficient, although with a particularly difficult case it may take up to 10 days. I only hope Jane can spare me for so long."
"I'm sure she must have been very reluctant to see you go, especially in her condition."
"Oh, she was beside herself. But Mr. Bingley was all consideration, urging me to think of myself. He insisted I was not to hurry back until I had been properly attended to. He has sympathy for my state, even if others do not."
Mary decided to ignore her mother's pointed glare and reached out instead for one of the little cakes that sat so invitingly amongst the coffee things. Before she could take one, Mrs. Bennet removed them to the other end of the table.
"I don't think so, Mary. Sugar is most injurious to complexions such as yours."
With a sigh, Mary understood that her mother had been provoked by her remark about her nerves, and that she must expect to suffer for it until Mrs. Bennet felt herself revenged. And just as Mary had expected, when Mrs. Gardiner left the room to see her children, her mother settled down to the pleasure of delivering a few more disobliging observations.
"I cannot say your holiday has been of much benefit to you."
She moved a little nearer to examine her daughter more closely.
"You don't look anywhere near as well as you did when you set out. You are quite pale, washed out even."
"I'm sorry you think so, Mama."
"A little rouge might not go amiss. But judging from her own complexion, Mrs. Gardiner has none about her."
"I do not know. I have not asked her."
"Well, as everything of hers is always to be preferred by you to anything of mine, I shall not offer you any of my own. Were there any young men to be met with in the lakes?"
"There were two gentlemen in our party, Mama, as I believe I wrote to tell you."
"Did you? I cannot recall. But neither of them showed you any particular attention?"
"I did not go to the lakes in search of a suitor," replied Mary as evenly as she could, "but to see for myself the beauties of the landscape, and with that I was very well satisfied."
Boldly she reached across to the plate of cakes and took one. But her defiance was not equal to actually consuming it in the face of her mother's frank disapproval, and she set it, untasted, on the edge of her coffee cup.
"Were you indeed? Well, I suppose we must hope your luck will change now you are back in town."
Mrs. Bennet leant over and rang the bell.
"The girl can come up now and do the dusting. This furniture is a disgrace."
She ran her finger across the top of a little side table and looked askance at the results.
"I suppose you remember what I told you about your spectacles. Did you wear them at the lakes? If so, you have only yourself to blame for coming home in the same situation in which you left. But my advice is never heeded."
Mrs. Bennet's visits to Dr. Simmons met all her expectations, as he took a most gratifying interest in her complaints, without prescribing anything unpleasant to cure them. Her only regret was that the consultations were over so quickly. They occupied no more than a few hours every other morning, leaving her with a great deal of time on her hands, which required Mary and Mrs. Gardiner to give up their other occupations to entertain her. With Mrs. Gardiner, Mrs. Bennet found many engaging topics to discuss, from the inadequacy of the children's breakfasts to the unaccountable negligence of the head parlourmaid, but her conversations with her daughter followed a much narrower path. Her interests remained pretty much what they had always been, and she had nothing to say to Mary on any subject other than her looks and her marriage prospects. On both these questions, Mary refused to be drawn. She was particularly determined that no mention of Mr. Hayward's name should reach her mother's ears. She did not think she could bear the interrogation she knew would follow if any hint of her feelings for him were to escape her. Mary was sure Mrs. Gardiner could be trusted with the secret. Her relations with her sister-in-law were not such as encouraged the exchange of private intimacies. If anything, Mary was more afraid of betraying it herself, revealing it by some unguarded expression forced out of her by her mother's relentless questioning. To avoid such an accident, Mary did all she could to reduce the hours she was obliged to sit with Mrs. Bennet, and in pursuit of fresh air and a little relief from her mother's presence, she spent more and more time on her walks around the city. As she retraced her old routes, she slowly recovered the enjoyment she had once found in them, and usually came back happier than she had set out. But as she left the house one morning, the weather was against her. The skies were low and grey and threatened rain, and she only got as far as St. Paul's before the showers began. She took shelter in the great doorway for a while. Eventually, she had no choice but to pull up her collar and make her way back to Gracechurch Street. When she arrived back at the house, she was surprised to hear her mother's laughter drifting down to the hall from the drawing room. Perhaps the great Dr. Simmons was paying a house call. But when she entered, there was Mrs. Bennet, sitting delightedly on the sofa, gazing with every appearance of approval at the smart, manly figure of Mr. Ryder. Her aunt, from the other side of the room, caught Mary's eye and made the tiniest shrug, but Mrs. Bennet did not see it. She was far too fascinated by Mr. Ryder to notice anything occurring beyond the space occupied by his captivating person.
"Miss Bennet!" he exclaimed, jumping up to greet her. "I am so glad you have come back. I should have been very sorry to leave without the pleasure of seeing you."
"I was out walking," began Mary before her mother interrupted her.
"Your hair is damp, my dear,"
she cried with a brilliant smile Mary did not recall seeing directed at her before.
"I'm sure you will want to attend to it before you join us."
"May I request that you do not?" said Mr. Ryder eagerly. "It is charming, exactly as it is, very natural and becoming." Mrs. Bennet was somewhat taken aback to hear so unmistakable a compliment addressed to Mary, but she quickly recovered herself.
"All my girls were brought up to be as natural as possible, sir. I do hate to see anything false in a young woman."
"I cannot speak to the virtues of your other daughters," declared Mr. Ryder smoothly, "not having had the pleasure of meeting them. But I can say that with this, Miss Bennet, you have succeeded admirably. There is no artifice in her at all." He smiled knowingly at Mary, his expression conveying with amusement that he understood the part he was expected to play in the conversation and would not scruple to indulge himself in doing so.
"I might add," he continued, "that having been introduced to Mrs. Bennet, it is only too apparent from whom her daughter has inherited her delightful manner."
"Really, Mr. Ryder," exclaimed Mrs. Gardiner, "that is a little too much, even for you."
"I am never afraid to offer praise where praise is due," he murmured. Mrs. Bennet, not at all disconcerted, moved a little forward on the sofa.
"I should very much like to hear about your trip to the lakes, sir. I have always longed to see them, but I have not been lucky enough to do so. My desires are not much attended to, but as long as everyone else is happy, I do not mind it."
Mary touched her hair, feeling the raindrops wet on her hand. Mr. Ryder launched obligingly into a lively account of their trip, occasionally appealing to Mary or Mrs. Gardiner to confirm some detail. He did not, Mary noticed, mention the scaffell climb, for which she was very grateful. She obediently added an aside now and then, but she had no desire to establish in Mrs. Bennet's mind a picture of herself and Mr. Ryder as inseparable fellow travellers, or indeed good friends. She knew her mother would already be thinking of him as a potential suitor, and she did not wish to offer her any further encouragement. When Mr. Ryder eventually took his leave, Mrs. Bennet could barely contain her excitement.
"What an extremely interesting young man! Such manners, such presence, such consideration! It is a long time since I have met with anyone quite so charming."
"Yes, Mamma, he can be very agreeable."
"Agreeable? Is that the best you can say about him? What are his circumstances? Who are his people?"
"His family resides in Kent. I believe he is quite comfortably situated," replied Mary. "His income is such that he is not to be obliged to follow any profession." She did not mention his connection to Lady Catherine. She knew this would only sharpen her mother's appetite to push her into Mr. Ryder's arms.
"Then he is a most eligible young man. I assume he has no existing ties. He is not promised elsewhere."
"I believe not," admitted Mary. "Although another lady has shown herself ready to oblige him, if he could be persuaded to ask her." There was a moment's silence, as Mrs. Bennet absorbed the implications of this knowledge.
"I am not sure I quite believe my ears."
She leant forward, fixing her daughter with a disbelieving stare.
"Here is a young man with every advantage, rich, obliging, very good-looking, a man who is interested in you, very interested from what I have just seen, and yet you talk about another woman pursuing him with no more concern than if he had been a pound of butter."
She sat back in her seat, exasperated by such willful stupidity.
"What are you thinking of? What can have possessed you to be so foolish?"
"I think of Mr. Ryder as a friend," replied Mary uncertainly. "A good friend, but no more than that."
"A single young woman cannot have a man as a friend," exclaimed Mrs. Bennet. "He is either a suitor or he is nothing. And there is no doubt in my mind that whatever you may say, Mr. Ryder was here very much in the character of a suitor."
Mary rose up from her chair and walked quickly to the window. She did not want her mother to see how her words had affected her. In her heart, she knew they were true, but she had not wished to acknowledge that fact, even to herself. "I have not considered him in that light."
"Then it is time you did, before it is too late."
With this final disbelieving exclamation, Mrs. Bennet turned her infuriated attentions to Mrs. Gardiner.
"I am amazed, sister, amazed that I have been told nothing about this young man. And then, just as I learn of his existence, I discover there is a rival for his affections, that there is a chance Mary may be cut out."
"She cannot be cut out if she does not wish to marry him," replied Mrs. Gardiner. "And I have not heard anything from Mary that suggests that is what she wants."
"Of course it is what she wants, even if she does not know it yet. Marriage is what every woman wants, and, whilst she was in your care, it was your duty to persuade her of that."
"I am not sure interference on my part would be either helpful or desirable,"
retorted Mrs. Gardiner, who had made up her mind not to be provoked, and, not without difficulty, continued to keep her temper.
"In my experience, these matters are best left to the young people to decide."
Mrs. Bennet waved a dismissive hand.
"How can they possibly do so when they are neither old enough nor experienced enough to know their own minds? It is up to us to show them what is for the best, and make them act on it if we can."
"Then I'm afraid we must disagree," declared Mrs. Gardiner icily. "Their affections are not to be forced or coerced. They must find their own way. All we can do is prevent the very worst from happening, to keep our daughters away from blackguardly men, and instill in them enough sense to resist their blandishments."
The words "elopement" and "disastrous" and "Lydia" hovered in the air, but Mrs. Gardiner thought better than to utter them, and Mrs. Bennet was too distracted to perceive any personal application in what had been said, which, if she had, would have required her to leave her brother's house that very evening, if not before.
"You are entirely mistaken," declared Mrs. Bennet. "The cleverest girl is sometimes utterly blind to where her true interest lies. Look at Lizzie, if you like. Having safely married 4 daughters, I think I may be allowed some experience in these matters."
Mrs. Gardiner thought it prudent to say no more, but Mrs. Bennet was not to be silenced.
"And what have you been doing in all of this to advance your cause? No, miss, don't speak. I can see nothing at all."
She shook her head, unable to believe a daughter of hers could be so indifferent to her own best interests.
"Even you, Mary, must surely see," her mother continued, "that if Mr. Ryder has made no offer to this other lady, who appears to have a better grasp of her position than you, it must be because he likes you."
"He may not wish to marry either of us, Mamma. Have you thought of that?"
"Don't be ridiculous, Mary. A single man in possession of a good fortune must be in search of a wife."
"As I say, I consider us as friends only. I have no reason to believe he thinks of me in any other way." Mary knew this was disingenuous, but her mother's eagerness frightened her.
"Nonsense," retorted Mrs. Bennet. "He looks at you with real admiration. I suppose you are not used to it and don't recognize it when you see it, but I assure you it is so."
She turned towards Mrs. Gardiner.
"Even you must agree with me on this point. It is impossible to deny he admires her, is it not, sister?"
Mary could see her aunt had no wish to encourage Mrs. Bennet, but could not bring herself to lie.
"Yes, Mr. Ryder is very fond of Mary. He sees qualities in her that others have not appreciated, even those closest to her, and that is greatly to his credit."
"In that case, I am all the more amazed you haven't done more to advance matters. But fortunately, I am here now, and I will have everything settled before I go back to Jane."
Chapter 87. It did not take Mrs. Bennet long to discover that Mr. Ryder was a distant relation of Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Mary supposed she had extracted the information from Mr. Gardiner, and this drove her to even more determined efforts to secure him for her daughter. When he appeared at Gracechurch Street, which he did increasingly often, he was plied with coffee, tea, and every kind of cake. At Mrs. Bennet's insistence, he was invited to dinner, and served Mr. Gardiner's best claret. He was coddled and flattered and treated to every kind of delicacy until Mary thought he might burst. He did not seem to mind it, and remained his usual easy, cheerful self. But after one particularly trying afternoon, when she thought she might curl up and die from shame, Mary summoned up her courage and complained.
"I do beg you, Mamma, to leave Mr. Ryder alone. It is very unseemly to encourage him as you do."
"Don't be ridiculous," exclaimed her mother. "We are only making him welcome, inviting him into the family circle, you might say."
"It isn't fair. It raises his hopes. It makes him feel as though he has some special claim on us, on me."
"Yes, that is the general idea. How else will we get him to make you an offer?"
Once an idea had taken root in Mrs. Bennet's mind, it was almost impossible to dislodge. Mary knew she could throw herself endlessly against her mother's iron will without making the slightest dent on her convictions. Nevertheless, she persevered.
"But I do not think I want to marry him."
Mrs. Bennet did not look up from her sewing, as if this was too silly an idea to be seriously entertained.
"Don't be silly. You won't do any better, I can promise you that. You were prepared to take on Mr. Collins before that sharp little hussy, Charlotte Lucas, plucked him out of our grasp. And Mr. Ryder is a great deal better looking, richer, and infinitely more agreeable than Mr. Collins. If you throw this opportunity away, who else do you think will have you?"
"His friend," cried Mary to herself. "I would willingly, joyfully take his friend."
But Mr. Hayward had not written. Perhaps he would never write. It was possible that she would never see him again. Grief suddenly overwhelmed her. She could not control herself and fled out of the drawing room into the hall, where she passed a shocked Mrs. Gardiner, and up the stairs to her bedroom, where she covered her face with a pillow so that no one should hear. There she cried and cried until she could cry no more. It was half an hour before she mastered her feelings. She lay dry-eyed for a little time before she rose up and smoothed down her dress. Then she washed her face, combed her hair, and pinched her cheeks to give herself a little colour. When satisfied she was presentable, she made her way down towards the drawing-room. Before she could enter, she heard her aunt and her mother arguing within, their voices tight and angry. She stood rooted to the spot, her hand grasping the banister, unable to move, although she knew she should.
"I really do implore you to leave matters alone for a while," urged Mrs. Gardiner. "I know you mean well, but when I see the unhappy state she's reduced to, I fear any further interference risks doing more harm than good."
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean by interference. It is the second time you have used the word. I cannot see it applies in a mother's case."
"She is not a child any more," exclaimed Mrs. Gardiner, "but a thoughtful young woman. A silly, flighty girl might need to be cajoled into doing the right thing, but Mary is far too steady to require coercion. She is quite capable of making her own choice."
"I was not aware that there was a choice to make. It is this young man or nothing, and that, as we both know, amounts to no choice at all."
Her aunt did not reply immediately. When she did speak, her voice was more conciliating.
"I believe there is another gentleman for whom Mary has a preference. A very decent, respectable man, a good friend of our family. He accompanied us to the lakes, and whilst we were there, it seemed that a real affection was growing between him and Mary. I had great hopes for it."
"Indeed? May I ask, then, where he is? I have been in Gracechurch Street for 10 days now, and have not been introduced to him."
"No," admitted Mrs. Gardiner. "His absence is most unusual. Something went wrong in the lakes. A misunderstanding or a quarrel of some kind. It is that, I believe, which is the cause of Mary's unhappiness."
Sensing triumph, Mrs. Bennet rose up to deliver her verdict.
"Well, if the gentleman is not here, I think that tells us all we need to know about the strength of his affection. Mr. Ryder, on the other hand, is both present and interested. There is such a thing, sister, as a bird in the hand."
Mary had heard enough. She dreaded meeting her mother on the stairs as she emerged victorious from the drawing room and tried to think of somewhere to hide, but she feared that wherever she went in the house, Mrs. Bennet would seek her out and continue to hector her there. She had no choice but to put on her outdoor things and venture out into the city again. When she was halfway down Gracechurch Street, she stopped for a moment, quite overcome. The London air was smokier than usual, and the coal dust stung her eyes. That must be why she felt tears on her cheeks once more. She brushed them away angrily and walked on, with no clear sense of either direction or purpose. Chapter 88. The next morning, promptly at 11 o'clock, Mr. Ryder rang the bell. Mary was alone. Her mother had gone to see Dr. Simmons, and her aunt had taken the children for their morning walk. Mr. Ryder looked pleased to discover this. He appeared smarter than ever in a coat Mary had not seen before, his hair neatly brushed. He strolled into the drawing-room with the greatest ease and, when invited to sit down, took up his position in what had become his accustomed chair.
"I have brought you some fresh magazines. Both the Edinburgh and the Quarterly have new editions out. I thought you would like them."
Mary was so relieved to discuss a subject other than matrimony that she leapt upon the prospect of a rational conversation. Encouraged, Mr. Ryder exerted himself to be as sensible and discriminating as he could. At the end of a lively hour, in which their discussions ranged over subjects as varied as the history of the Ottoman Empire, a new translation of Dante, and the surprising advances made in the science of cooking ranges, both felt they had acquitted themselves creditably. "It is a while since I have had the pleasure of speaking to you alone," Mr. Ryder observed, closing the Edinburgh Review very decidedly, as if to indicate that their conversation would move into new territories. "I must say, I have missed it." "Yes, my mother has been very much with us." She hesitated, then decided she would speak candidly. "I'm sorry if her manner was a little trying, if her matchmaking intentions were very obvious. It is her way, I'm afraid, but I'm very sorry if you were at all embarrassed." Mr. Ryder laughed.
"Really, Miss Bennet, I am not a man who is much troubled by embarrassment. You must have observed that for yourself."
"Indeed," she replied, "it is not a quality I've often noticed in you." "But," he continued,
"your mother's hints did have the effect of concentrating my thoughts."
He paused, then looked into her eyes with the greatest earnestness. "I think you must have been aware, both when we were in the lakes and back here in London, how very much I relish your company. How very much, in fact, I admire you." Mary put down her copy of the review carefully on the table, attempting to avoid his gaze. She very much hoped he was not about to say what she feared. "My preference for you must have been quite plain, so I hope it will come as no surprise when I say I have developed the greatest affection for you." He looked at her encouragingly, a little self-conscious now, but not unpleased with himself. "I have allowed myself to hope," he added smoothly, "that my liking may perhaps be returned." He sat back a little, still looking at her intently, waiting for her answer. "Your liking, sir, I do return. We have become very good friends." "But perhaps a little more than that? You seem to enjoy my visits. My company does not seem objectionable to you. And on Scafell, when we spoke alone, I felt a deeper connection between us. I believe you did, too." Mary dropped her eyes. She had not imagined he would remember that. "Yes, there was a moment when I took to heart the things you said." "You must understand," he declared, excited now, "that I meant it all, about living a life freely chosen, about leaving behind all the dreary constraints that prevent us from being truly happy." "I understand you spoke sincerely." "I would do everything in my power to make that life real, for both of us. I don't want the kind of existence that satisfies most men. I want something more than that. And I think you do, too." "You have always made it very clear that an ordinary domestic life would not be enough for you." He drew his chair closer to her. She could feel his breath as he spoke.
"I have a mind to go abroad, to Italy, as I said before, somewhere with a lake in front of me and mountains behind. Come with me. We could read poetry all day and drink wine every evening. We should be very happy."
Mary could hardly believe this was happening. For most of her life, she had considered it impossible that any man should speak to her in such terms, let alone one as handsome as Mr. Ryder. She sat very still and looked around her. She supposed his words marked a great moment in their way. She should not die without hearing that someone wanted and desired her. Her world should have been turned upside down by such an experience. But in reality, everything looked just as it did the moment before he had spoken. The late summer sun poured through the drawing-room windows, catching in its beams the London dust that could never be entirely eradicated, no matter how often the room was swept and the furniture polished. The chintz on the sofa shone dully. The flowers on the sideboard were past their best and should really be changed. Everything was the same. And she herself was no more transformed than her surroundings. She could not deny that she was gratified to hear his words, or that they had provoked in her a brief thrill of what? Was it relief? Was it satisfaction? But that had been all. She was not overwhelmed. She felt no transformative flood of feeling. Mr. Ryder was not the man from whom she yearned to hear a heartfelt declaration of love. You are very honest, Mr. Ryder, so I will attempt to be equally so in return. I'm very touched by the openness with which you've declared your feelings, but I fear I am not the right match for you. I like you very much, but I don't love you, and it would not be right to pretend that I do. Mr. Ryder frowned, stood up, and walked to the window. His disappointment was evident as he stared down into the street, tinged perhaps with the merest hint of surprise. Mary imagined he was not often frustrated in achieving his wishes. It seemed a new experience for him, and not an agreeable one.
But in time you might feel differently.
I don't think so, and eventually I fear I would bore you. I don't have your lightness and levity. In the end, you would find me dull.
That would never happen. Never.
He turned from the window to face her. I thought you had more courage. I am not really very brave, you know, and I don't think the life you describe would make me happy, at least not for long. He returned to his chair and sat down with a sigh and an air of reluctant resignation.
Then there's not the slightest point in my raising the subject again?
I'm afraid not. I'm sorry if I've given you pain. I hope you'll believe it was not my intention. She reached out her hand and touched his arm. He sat crestfallen for a few minutes, during which both were silent. Then he stood up with a rueful smile.
I thank you for your candour. I said before that I was not much troubled by embarrassment. I did not expect to be tested in that respect quite so quickly or so powerfully. But I hope to be able to summon up enough self-possession to call upon you again soon.
I hope you will. I should be sorry to lose your friendship. Once he had gone, she went to the window and pushed it up. The breeze that wafted in could hardly be called sweet-smelling, but at least it was cool. She let it play over her face as she considered what had just happened. It was a little while before it struck her that it was not exactly what she had first thought. When she considered what Mr. Ryder had actually said, she realised that the word marriage had never crossed his lips. For a moment she was puzzled. What then had he meant? Then suddenly she understood. His offer had nothing to do with matrimony. She gasped as she remembered that in this very room he had assured Mrs. Gardiner he looked forward to a day when men and women came together freely without the necessity of bans or vows. Is that what he had intended for her? That she should become his mistress? That he would take her into keeping, as Mr. Wickham had attempted to do with Lydia? It was so incredible and unlikely an idea that she almost laughed. She supposed she should be insulted, outraged even, but somehow she could not summon up any anger. If he had suggested apartments in Mayfair and an allowance of £500 a year, she would indeed have been deeply offended. But she understood that what he wanted was not a discreet liaison of the irregular kind, the usual mercenary transaction where money was exchanged for reputation, but something very different. Had he received enough encouragement to elaborate on his offer, she knew how he would have described it. As a partnership of like-minded spirits, emancipated from tired old customs, living free and independent under sunny skies amongst poets and artists in a world where only the emotions mattered. He had not wished to insult her. No doubt he genuinely thought such an arrangement preferable to marriage. What would he have done if she had accepted? Would he have been shocked at her boldness? And what would her mother say when she discovered the nature of the offer Mr. Ryder had made her? There would be no more fond looks and encouraging smiles then. Or perhaps not. Perhaps Mrs. Bennet might prefer to see her daughter living in Italy in an ambiguous connection with a rich man rather than embarrassingly present around the house as the unmarried sister nobody had wanted. The more she thought of it, Mary wasn't at all sure which possibility her mother would consider the most disappointing outcome. Chapter 89. For all his assurances that he would soon return to Gracechurch Street, Mary had not expected to see Mr. Ryder for a while. Surely even his easy temper must have been a little lowered by her refusal, but only a single day elapsed before his arrival was again announced, and this time to a drawing room in which Mary sat accompanied by her mother and aunt. When he came in, Mary saw that his bearing was quite different from his usual demeanour. He was formal, even a little grave. He did not sit down, but stood before her mother and aunt and asked if he might be allowed to speak to Mary alone. Mrs. Bennet could not hide her excitement and leapt up eagerly from the sofa.
"Of course! Just as you wish. Come, sister, let us leave the young people to themselves."
Mrs. Gardiner, however, was not to be hurried away.
"I should like to know first if that is what Mary wishes. Do you want us to go, Mary?"
Mr. Ryder stared at Mary with a silent, beseeching appeal. She knew she could not refuse. It would be too cruel, too public a humiliation.
"Thank you, aunt. I am happy to speak to Mr. Ryder alone."
Delighted, her mother beckoned to Mrs. Gardiner, who rose to join her without enthusiasm. Mrs. Bennet bustled over to Mary, and under a great show of embracing her, whispered loudly into her ear,
"This is the moment, Mary. He means to declare himself, I'm sure of it."
When the door closed, and Mrs. Gardiner could be heard ushering Mrs. Bennet away from the door and swiftly downstairs, Mr. Ryder unbent a little.
"I must begin by thanking you for your kindness in seeing me at all. Not many ladies would have been so generous after what I suggested yesterday. I'm here, in part, at least, to ask your forgiveness."
"I have to admit, sir, that it was not until after you had gone that I understood exactly what your proposal implied. If I had grasped it at the time you made it, I might not have been so considerate in my reply."
He had the grace to look uncomfortable.
"I am truly mortified, but I want you to understand that my intentions were not what they must have appeared. I did not have in mind something cheap and sordid. My head was full of ideals, not low, disreputable arrangements."
"Yes, that was what I imagined. But I must tell you, Mr. Ryder, that for the woman in the case, I'm not sure that there is as much distance between the two as you like to think. The world in general will not make the distinction that you do."
"I am afraid you are right.
The gulf between the world as we would like it to be and the world as it is remains as vast and unbridgeable as ever."
He attempted an apologetic smile.
"I know I do not deserve your indulgence, but I hope I might beg it anyway. May we sit down and speak like rational people for a moment?"
Mary agreed. The earnestness of his request would have made it difficult to refuse, and settled herself once more on the sofa. Mr. Ryder stationed himself opposite her. It was obvious now that he had come to do more than deliver an apology.
"I shall not, as they say, beat about the bush," he began, "but will go straight to it. I spent most of last night turning matters over in my mind, and I have concluded I shall do what I should have done yesterday and make you an offer which cannot be misconstrued. I would be very honoured, Miss Bennet, if you would accept my hand in marriage."
Mary could not conceal her surprise, and Mr. Ryder looked across at her sadly.
"Your astonishment does not do me much credit, I feel, but perhaps that is no more than I deserve.
I'm sorry, but I am... That is, I never imagined that this was what you intended.
And now that you know, may I ask what you think?
I'm afraid my answer must be the same I made to you yesterday. I am very sensible of the honour you do me by asking, and for understanding that marriage, and not what you suggested before, is the only offer I could seriously consider accepting. But I do not love you, Mr. Ryder, and I cannot think it would be fair to either of us for me to accept you unless I did.
He left his chair and moved to join her on the sofa. He began to speak in a serious, confiding tone Mary had not heard before. I knew you would say that, but I beg you to think again. We are good friends, are we not? And I ask you, Miss Bennet, might not friendship be a firmer foundation for matrimony than love, which burns itself out in the end? Mary clasped her hands together. That was indeed what her books had told her. Dr. Fordyce had insisted upon it. She had thought herself prepared to marry Mr. Collins on exactly such terms. But now, called on to apply the theory to the most momentous decision she had yet made in her life, she found she could not do it.
Yes, we do very well as friends, but as husband and wife, I'm not sure our tempers would ever agree.
You think me too frivolous, not thoughtful enough for you?
That would be presumptuous of me. I do not mean to give myself airs I'm sure I don't deserve. I only meant that our characters are so different. We should not find much common ground between us. He sat quite still, considering how to reply.
Do you know why I wish to marry you, Miss Bennet?
No, Mr. Ryder. I confess I am a little puzzled to understand it.
There are all the usual reasons, of course. I enjoy your company. I find you kind, unaffected, modest, and charming. Yes, don't look away. That is what I feel. But I must tell you, there is a more selfish dimension to my preference. I think you would improve me. You are serious where I am flighty. You work hard where I am lazy. You think deeply where I am shallow. Think what a good deed you would do in marrying me. Imagine how your influence would change me for the better. Perhaps for those reasons, if for no other, you are obliged to accept me?
He stood up, as composed as she had ever seen him.
I won't ask for your final answer now. I will leave you with that thought, but I would be grateful if you would favour me with a reply as soon as you have decided.
Mary's voice shook a little.
Of course, sir.
He bowed and was gone. Mary saw her hands were trembling. She had never heard him speak so sincerely before. What was she to think of it?
She had no time to consider further before her mother bustled excitedly into the room.
Was I right? Did he make you an offer?
Yes, Mama, he did.
I knew it! I knew it! Did I not say so?
She was almost beside herself with joy.
Imagine! I shall see you married after all, and to such a respectable, good-looking man. Who would have thought it?
She leant down and kissed Mary on both cheeks, a gesture she had never made before. When Mrs. Gardiner entered the room, Mrs. Bennet rushed over and took her hand, bursting with the good news she had to impart.
Mary is to be married to Mr. Ryder. He has just this minute asked her.
Mrs. Gardiner started, taken aback.
Really, Mary? Is this so? Are you really engaged to him?
Mary looked from her mother to her aunt, taking in the joy of one and the astonishment of the other, steeling herself to say what had to be said.
Not exactly. He has made me an offer, but I have not accepted.
He has asked me to think it over and give him a final answer as soon as I can. Mrs. Bennet grasped at Mrs. Gardiner's arm as if to steady herself. When she had caught her breath, she lowered herself into a chair, from where she stared at Mary with appalled incomprehension.
What can you mean? Why on earth did you not accept him? What if he thinks better of it?
If he were to behave so basely, declared Mrs. Gardiner, then he is hardly the sort of man we could wish Mary to marry.
You must write to him this minute,
Mrs. Bennet cried.
Tell him it was girlish silliness. You were overcome. Your head was turned. But you are delighted to say yes now. Nothing would make you happier. Let me get a pen and some paper.
Please, Mama, I want to please you. Really, I do. But I don't love him.
What do your feelings have to do with it? He's a decent enough man, and he wants to give you a home. You would have been pleased enough to take Mr. Collins on those terms.
You have mentioned that before, but since then I can't explain it exactly. I have changed.
Is that so? Well, if there has been a change, it has definitely been for the worse. You used to pride yourself on your rationality. Now, it seems, you have lost all sense of where your real interest lies.
Mrs. Gardiner placed her hand soothingly on Mrs. Bennet's sleeve, attempting to calm her anger, but Mrs. Bennet shook it off.
Take care, Mary. You are about to make the biggest mistake of your life.
Chapter 90. The next day was one of the most agitating and miserable Mary could remember. Mrs. Bennet lost no opportunity to badger her, beginning before breakfast and following her from room to room to argue Mr. Ryder's case. Finally, when her aunt saw that Mary could bear it no longer, she led her away to her bedroom and closed the door behind them. They sat together on the bed, Mrs. Gardiner holding Mary's hand.
You should stay here for a while. You will never be able to reason clearly if you are always to be harassed and annoyed.
Surprised, Mary pulled away from her aunt. Does this mean you too believe there is something for me to think about? That I should seriously consider accepting Mr. Ryder? Mrs. Gardiner did not reply, but rose calmly and walked across to Mary's dressing table.
Your hair is coming down at the back, my dear. Why don't you take it down and let me brush it a little for you? I have always found that very soothing to a troubled mind.
Mary looked wary, but Mrs. Gardiner was not to be denied.
I will put it up again afterwards. I promise you it will do you good.
Seeing she had no choice, Mary joined her at the dressing table and pulled out the pins in her hair. When it was released, Mrs. Gardiner began to brush it in long, sweeping strokes, speaking quietly as she did so.
Now, do not be angry or upset at what I'm about to say. You know me well enough, I hope, to understand I would never urge you to act against what you believe to be right. But before you make up your mind to reject him, I think you must give Mr. Ryder's offer the careful and sober consideration it deserves.
I believe I have already done so.
I know you have thought about little else since yesterday, but there are a few points I should like to mention to you. I want to be certain you have given them their proper weight before you make your decision.
Mary knew that her aunt would not hector her, and her steady, rhythmic attentions to her hair had indeed brushed away some of her agitation, so she did not object when Mrs. Gardiner began to speak.
I shall be very candid with you, her aunt began, as I believe you are sensible enough to benefit from a little straightforward advice. Now, we both know that your mother is often selfish and silly, and that you have had a great deal to bear from her. But, hard as it is to accept, that does not mean everything she says is always wrong. The truth is, Mr. Ryder might indeed be a perfectly good husband for you. He has many worthy qualities. He is kind, cheerful, and obviously very fond of you. Yes, his fancies and passions make him now and then a little absurd, but that is a complaint known as youth, one which we all grow out of soon enough.
She laid down the stiff brush she had been using and picked a softer one from the dressing table before continuing.
He is essentially good-natured and, as even you must have noticed, not ill-looking. It appears he has enough money to provide you with an easy life and a comfortable home. You would have a place of your own to live in, with all your things about you. I think you would like that. If you are lucky, you may also have children, too. I think you would like that, too.
She paused for a moment and looked at Mary in the mirror.
I will also observe that it is unlikely you would have much trouble managing him. Your mind, Mary, is superior to his,
as both you and he must know. He told me I would improve him, murmured Mary, that it was my duty to marry him, because I possessed qualities he did not. Did he, indeed? I would not have thought him so perceptive. There, you see, he may have capacities as yet unthought of. But I do not love him. You know that. And you also know to whom my affections truly incline. Yes, I do. Mrs. Gardiner picked up a pair of combs and a handful of pins and began to put up Mary's hair. On which note, I should tell you that I wrote to Tom's mother a week ago. I wanted to know where he was and when he planned to return to London. Mary closed her eyes. Just to hear his name pronounced was enough to upset her. What did she say? Is he well? Did she have news of him? He was with his family until last week, and then he left. He went off quite alone, saying he was not sure where he would go, only that he wished to be in a place where he could take solitary walks, should not be bothered, and might have time to collect his thoughts. Mrs. Hayward did not seem to think this unusual. She supposed he was off to explore some new poetic landscape. Then she does not know where he is. Apparently not. She said he intends to come straight to London once he is done with walking, but she could not say when that might be. Mary imagined him striding through wet grass, a stick in his hand, a lone figure in an empty landscape. He has never written to me, you know. I have not heard a word from him since he left us at the inn. I thought as much, but I'm sorry to hear it confirmed. It is not what I would have expected from him. No, I would have thought the same until we went to the lakes. I knew something untoward occurred there, but as you did not wish to speak of it, I did not press you to do so. Mrs. Gardiner had now secured Mary's hair into a neat chignon. It looked smooth and elegant, in contrast with the pale, worried face beneath it. Pleased with the result, her aunt smiled encouragingly into the mirror, and Mary was suddenly stricken with an overwhelming need to throw off her reticence and confide to Mrs. Gardiner everything that had happened. Perhaps in the telling of it, she might at last discern some explanation for why it had ended as it did. What difference could it make now, anyway? She watched as her aunt put the brushes and combs back in their proper places and returned to sit once more on the bed, waiting expectantly. This time, Mary did not reject her unspoken invitation, but joined her there. "You are quite right," she said. "Something happened between us in the lakes, but even now I am not sure what it was. When we first arrived, well, I have never been happier. Mr. Hayward and I, we were so pleased with each other, so easy in each other's company. I believe I told you a little of what I felt. He was so attentive. He said such affectionate things. He suggested he had feelings for me, or I thought he did. That I allowed myself to believe he was truly attached to me. I even imagined, that is, I hoped, that he might finally declare himself whilst we were there. But then Mr. Ryder and his party arrived and everything changed." She shivered a little and reached for her shawl from the other side of her bed, wrapping it carefully around her shoulders so as not to disarrange her hair. "It was not long afterwards that Mr. Hayward began to pull away from me. I don't know how else to describe it. Suddenly, with no explanation. Each day he was cooler, more distant. At first I was at a loss to understand his behaviour, but then I thought I understood. He was jealous of Mr. Ryder." Mrs. Gardiner took her hand once more, but offered no comment, and Mary went on. "I did all I could to suggest where my own preference lay, but he seemed not to see it. On the contrary, he seemed to grow ever more diffident, whilst Mr. Ryder did not hesitate to show the strength of his feelings. I bore it as long as I could, but then I grew impatient. Why could he not say what he wanted? And then, on Scafell, there was a misunderstanding. There were things I said that I believe confirmed Mr. Hayward's suspicions, that made him think I returned Mr. Ryder's admiration. She felt tears well up in her eyes.
I wish I had not said them. I was foolish, angry, irrational. I displayed all the qualities I've worked so hard all my life not to indulge. What was wrong with me?
You were miserable and disappointed, replied Mrs. Gardiner gently. Emotions that all of us feel, no matter how hard we try to inoculate ourselves against them. When we came down from the fell, continued Mary, I was determined to put matters right. I thought I could explain to Mr. Hayward that I had spoken in haste, that he had misinterpreted both my words and my actions. But before I could do so, he was gone. Mrs. Gardiner drew a handkerchief from her pocket and handed it to Mary, who wiped her eyes.
It is very unfair, she cried. I did not invite Mr. Ryder's attentions. I did nothing to encourage them.
I am sure you did not, replied Mrs. Gardiner. But if Tom convinced himself there was some feeling between you, that might explain his actions. Or if, for some reason, he believed it was his duty to stand aside, to let Mr. Ryder do exactly as he has done and make you an offer, that could also account for his long silence and his strange, hurtful absence.
I don't understand, cried Mary. If he feared I might prefer his friend, why did he simply not ask me what I felt? I should not have been afraid to answer a direct question. But he said nothing. Why did he not speak?
In matters such as these, my dear, even the best men can be very proud. They will bear a great deal of pain rather than humiliate themselves or act in a way they consider dishonourable. They will inflict it, too, even if they do not mean to do so. They do not always appreciate what preserving their honour costs those around them.
Mary hid her head in her hands and began to cry.
Is there no way things can be made right between us?
Mrs. Gardiner stroked her hair gently, but her expression was sober.
In all honesty, I do not know. I cannot say what Tom will do. I am very fond of him and think him incapable of acting wrongly to serve his own selfish interests. But I am not sure what he might sacrifice if he thought it was for the good of someone he cared for.
Even if that person does not wish it, does not want the sacrifice?
He might feel, as your mother does, that the person in question is not the best judge of where their true interest lies.
But I am not a child to have my decisions made for me.
No, you are not a child, replied Mrs. Gardiner gravely. But you are a woman, which, as you grow older, you are likely to discover puts you only slightly above the condition of an infant in the eyes of most of the world.
She raised Mary's face towards her, very serious now.
You have a hard choice to make, Mary, and what you have told me only serves to make it harder. I understand and I respect what you feel for Tom, but I cannot promise you that he will return and all will be well. It might happen, or it might not, and I'm afraid there is very little you can do about it. In such a situation, there is nothing a woman is allowed to do except wait. And who knows how long that wait will be, or with what outcome in the end. Meanwhile, Mr. Ryder offers security, a settled life, a place in the world. I do not think he will stand about to see if his friend reappears and decides to make you an offer himself. He is a mild, easy sort of man, but I don't think even he would stomach that.
You seem to say, cried Mary, that I am obliged to take the most important decision of my life in ignorance of what Mr. Hayward feels, because convention dictates I must do nothing.
What if I were to write to him and confess the true state of my feelings? Then at least I should be certain of his thoughts.
Every rule of polite society says you must not. A man would be shocked to get such a letter, amazed at the boldness of the woman who wrote it.
But you know him, persisted Mary. Do you really imagine Mr. Hayward would respond in so irrational a way?
I think his absence and his silence suggest we cannot know how he might behave in such a situation. But to return to Mr. Ryder, if you have any interest in accepting him, you are really obliged to do so without any further delay. However, if you decide to reject him, you must do so in the understanding that if Tom does not step forward as you hope, you may be left with no husband at all. And I do not need to rehearse to you how hard the life of a single woman can be. In short, as your mother would have it, Mr. Ryder is your bird in the hand. Only you can decide if you are ready to surrender him for the uncertain prospect of his friend in the bush.
Mrs. Gardiner stood up, touching Mary's cheek as she did so.
It may seem as though all my arguments favour Mr. Ryder. That is not quite what I intend. I see the strength of your feelings for Tom, and appreciate you may decide they are too powerful to ignore, but you should understand what you stand to lose if you decide to gamble everything upon them.
She bent down and gave her a final kiss.
Tea is in half an hour, if you feel inclined. I should like you to join us if you can, but will quite understand if you do not.
Chapter 91. Mary did not come down for tea or for dinner. Her mother often spoke of going up to her, but Mrs. Gardiner was adamant that Mary must be left alone. And with an ill grace, Mrs. Bennet was at length persuaded that no good would come of berating her daughter any further. Upstairs, Mary sat at her writing desk. When so long ago she had suggested to her mother that she might marry Mr. Collins, she had known nothing of emotions such as those Mr. Hayward had awakened in her. Even her brief encounter with John Sparrow had only hinted at the depth of feeling that possessed her now. It had not been so difficult to consider abandoning the idea of love when she had never truly experienced it. And had her ignorance continued, it was possible she might not have been entirely miserable. If by some chance she had indeed become Mrs. Collins, she thought she would have made the best of things, done everything in her power to make their partnership as pleasant as it could be, and would surely have made a better job of it than Charlotte Lucas. If she had known nothing else, if she had never had a hint of what real love looked like, she might have been content with the pale facsimile of happiness a pragmatic marriage offered. But now she had known Mr. Hayward. It would not do. Now that she had met a man she truly loved, she could not marry another. The absence of love was in itself enough to make marriage to Mr. Ryder impossible. But the more she considered it, the more Mary knew there was another powerful reason why she could not accept him. He had, as he intended, touched a nerve when he suggested it was her duty to marry him and make him a better man. Once that would have appealed to her. Once she would have embraced such an invitation with the greatest eagerness. What had all her hard work and study been for, if not to be directed to some practical application? And to what more noble purpose could they be put than the moral and intellectual improvement of another human being? But she understood now this was no foundation on which to build a marriage. She did not wish to be her husband's instructor any more than she wished to be his pupil. What she sought was a union of equals, a coming together of like minds and sympathetic intellects. At Longbourn, with the Collinses, she had seen how want of esteem was fatal to a marriage, how it soured goodwill, chilled relations between husband and wife, and snuffed out all sympathy. She had watched it freeze Charlotte Collins's feelings, even as it plunged her husband into an unhappiness he struggled either to comprehend or escape. But that was not the first time she had witnessed the corrosive effects of contempt in that house.
She understood now very clearly how it had poisoned the marriage of her own parents. Mr. Bennet's studied detachment, the ironic scornfulness of his teasing, the bitter amusement he took in the failings of others, especially his wife and daughters, all those cruel jibes flowed from the frustrated knowledge that he had married a woman he could never think of as his equal. Lizzie had once told her, with tears in her eyes, how their father had admitted the truth of this to her on the day she had sought his permission to marry Mr. Darcy. "Let me not have the grief of seeing you unable to respect your partner in life." It was not until this moment that Mary fully understood and felt for herself the significance of his bleak admonition. She reached out for a pen and paper, pulled both towards her, and began to write. The next morning, when she came down to breakfast, a letter with her name upon it sat bold and unmissable on her plate. She swallowed hard. She knew what it was. She had sent her message to Mr. Ryder last night, had it carried to his apartments by a willing servant for a few shillings and a bottle of beer. She had written because she did not feel equipped for the strain of another interview, and hoped that, in a carefully composed note, she stood a better chance of conveying both the strength of her regard and the finality of her refusal. She picked up the letter and slipped it into her pocket, hoping that, as she was the only person at the table, it had not been noticed. But just as she thought she was safe, her mother came into the room. She sat down quite calmly and poured herself some tea.
"Good morning, Mary. I was here a moment ago and I saw you had a letter. May I trouble you to know who it was from? Did it come from Mr. Ryder by any chance?"
"Yes, Mama, it did."
"I imagine it is in reply to a letter you have already sent him, which presumably contained your answer to his proposal."
Mary picked up the teapot with as much steadiness as she could muster. Now that she had made her decision, she must not waver under her mother's angry stare.
"I am astonished you did not show it to me before you sent it. Am I permitted to know what you told him?"
"I thanked him for the honour he did me in asking, but I explained that I could not marry him because I did not love him. I hoped we might continue to carry on as friends, if he wished to do so, and added I was sure he would have no trouble in finding very soon a lady who would be delighted to be his wife." Mrs. Bennet sat very still. From down the hall, one of the gardener boys was heard calling to his brother.
"Prettily written. But then you always were a dab hand with a pen. Although I must tell you it is without doubt the most ridiculous and harmful piece of work you have ever produced."
Mary steeled herself to keep her composure. She would not be intimidated by her mother's disdain. "I made no secret of what I intended to write."
"You did not attend to any of my objections."
"I listened to what you said with the greatest attention, but I am persuaded I have done the right thing."
"I always knew you to be a stubborn, contrary girl, but I did not think you a fool."
Mrs. Bennet poured herself a little more tea. Her hand, Mary saw, did not shake at all.
"You have thrown away your last and best chance of a comfortable settlement. I have no idea how you plan to live. I suppose you must fling yourself upon the charity of your sisters, for I cannot help you. What do you intend to do with yourself for the rest of your life? I can't imagine."
She reached for a piece of bread.
"Nothing to say, miss? Well, perhaps you are right to stay silent. You have made your bed and must lie on it. I did everything a mother could to help you. No one could have done more, but my efforts were not wanted. I shall go back to Jane immediately. Perhaps there my advice may still have some value."
"I am sorry, Mama, if I have angered you."
"I am beyond anger, Mary. I wash my hands of you."